Hi, I'm Linda Calabresi. I'm a GP and the medical editor of HealthEd. Welcome to our unique podcast series, now available direct to your device. The series features some of Australia's leading clinical experts talking on topics that are both practical and important to Australian GPs.
Thank you very much. It is a real pleasure to be here. It's also a great pleasure because with around 1 million women in Australia with pelvic pain, we've got a major workforce shortage and you're at the centre of it. And it's really important to us at Pelvic Pain Foundation that we support you and help you and remember us if you're looking for that assistance. So I have some disclosures. I make a very small amount of money out of the book, but I am a shareholder in Alira Biotech and we're developing a novel neuroimmune modulating intrauterine device. So that's very exciting for me anyway. So pelvic pain in teens, it's not easy. I'm sure you know it's not easy. I'm going to give you a symptom-based plan today for understanding it and some thoughts on management, just to help you explain and help you understand where they're at. And a lot of the time, it's looking at to where that teen is in their journey. This graph I absolutely love. If you've listened to me before, you've probably seen it. And it's what happens to chronic pain as children grow up. So when they're young, the boys and the girls have a very low level of a chronic pain condition. But by the time the girls have got to 16 to 18, they're 3 to 4 times as likely as a boy to have a chronic pain condition. And most of these students are teenage women with a combination of abdominal pain and headache. I know you see so many of them in your own practices. Now, over time, pain gets more complicated. So this is a study I did of 168 women in downtown Adelaide who came along to see me with their period pain-based pelvic pain. So sure, they all had period pain, but look at all the other symptoms they've got as well. Now, this isn't just have they got endometriosis. This is a whole body condition of pelvic pain syndrome. So when you see people, they might come and tell you about one thing, but this is the selection of symptoms that they'll come with. And the average in this group was that they had 8 of these symptoms, if you actually asked them. So things like stabbing pains, that's muscle pain, bowel problems, food intolerance, bladder troubles, bowel troubles, vulval pain, fatigue, poor sleep, anxiety, nausea, sweaty, dizzy, low mood. Haven't we all seen that? So this is a picture that I use to explain about how all these symptoms are related. So visceral pain and pelvic pain usually start somewhere. While the big one is period pain, so they didn't do anything wrong, they just grew up and they were the 1 in 5 who had a bad time with periods, it can start in their bowel or their bladder. So it starts somewhere, and then the other organs can get involved. So we've got in the picture, we've got the bowel, the bladder, we've got the muscles of the pelvic muscles, and we've got the central nervous system. We know that around 1 in 4 or 5 students will put their hand up if you ask them to say they have a bad time with periods and they're missing school. So common. Around 1/2 of those will develop endometriosis during their lifetime. You don't have to have endometriosis, but a lot of them will. Might be a little bit, might be a lot. It doesn't relate particularly well with the symptoms, but it adds a whole extra layer of complexity if they've got the endometriosis as well. So we're not talking endo or all these other symptoms. We're talking the symptoms plus or minus endometriosis. Now, pain, another word for pain, is neuroimmune inflammation. And if you ever want to know what pain really is, it's neuroimmune inflammation. And once you have it in a pelvic organ, you get that neuroimmune inflammation spread to the dorsal horn of the spinal cord. And in that area, you've got neurons and you've got glia. When I was a student, glia were considered architecture. They didn't really do anything. They just held the brain together and things. But that's so not true. They're an intimate part of your immune system. Circulating cells, macrophages and things, they're circulating immune cells. Glia are the CNS immune cells. So in that dorsal horn, we've got the glia modulating the neurons there. Then you get all these symptoms. So then you start to get the irritable bowel, the food intolerance. Who doesn't know an army of young women who are picky about what they eat? Because they know what makes them feel better. then you can get the bladder problems, less common, but certainly you can get that flow through to the pelvic muscle spasm, and then you get that central sensitization where they'll have chronic pain and those feel bad symptoms. Now, if you look at the nerves that are from the viscera, they go by similar pathways, and so it's really hard for the brain looking down to think, which organ was it? I've got some pain. Is this my period? Is it my bowel? Do I need to go to the toilet? You know, am I going to bleed soon? What should I do? Very hard, because a lot of those pains can feel similar. So we've had the visceral organs that can be involved, but then we've got the pelvic muscle reaction to the pain. So this is a common in lots of areas of medicine. So if you've got a back injury, you'll often get back muscle spasm, as I'm sure you know. But if you've got a pelvic visceral issue, or you've got endometriosis, then you'll often get a pelvic muscle reaction. But it's inside the pelvis, so it's so under-recognized and so under-diagnosed. And so neither you nor them are often necessarily picking up that their worst pain is usually a pelvic muscle pain. So this can be pelvic floor, and you can look at this picture and you can imagine what symptoms it might cause. So if it's tight around the urethra, they might have incomplete emptying or slow voiding. If it's around the vagina, well, they're not going to like using a tampon, and they're not going to necessarily like sex or speculums, because it's that pelvic floor that's tight and tender. And if it's around the bowel, then they'll have pain when they're leading up to a bowel action, pain passing a bowel action, and often pain afterwards, that pelvic floor muscle pain. Now, they'll also talk about sometimes a stabbing feeling up the vagina or a stabbing feeling up the bowel, except they probably won't, because they're way too embarrassed to bring out those weirdo comments to you in case you think that their pain's not real. Because remember, that's what they're terrified about, that you won't believe their pain's real. Now, the big muscle that's really important and so underdiagnosed is obturator internus. It's the muscle on the inside of the pelvis that is big and strong and narrows down into a little strap that sneaks out the back and attaches to the top of the leg. So I'm going to give you an idea of what this person with pain and severe pain in that muscle is going to be coming in with you for. You'll pick them a mile off. They'll be the one coming in. They're a bit bent over. They're talking about a stabbing pain on the side or both sides. They're finding it a bit hard to walk. They want to curl up in a ball. They love their heat pack. They've got pain that goes through to their back or their hip or maybe down their leg. And they find that they're worse if they do prolonged sitting. Some of you sadly might have it now, or prolonged standing. Those people, I suspect you've all seen those people with that stabbing, aching type pain. Think obturator internus. So easy to diagnose, just so easy. All you need is one finger in the vagina, a little bit of lube, they've got their legs flexed. You put the finger in the vagina, and first of all, I would always feel for pelvic floor. So I touch that muscle there, and they'll go, ow. And you say, have you had that pain before? Oh, yes. When would you get that pain? Oh, that might be my sex pain. But then, when you put that finger a little bit further up, about halfway to the cervix, and feel out the side of the pelvis. And it's often easier if you do that when they actually ask them with their knee to push against your outside hand. So you've got the one finger feeling out the pelvis, side of the pelvis. You can't hurt anything. And then you've got them pushing out with their knee. That muscle will stand up and just stroking it. And they'll go, ow, that's my pain. And you'll be the hero that found it. You'll be the hero that found the pain that they actually had all those laparoscopies trying to diagnose and find. So once they understand, it's so much easier to treat. Now, just a word about sensitivity and pain sensitization. So while you're sitting there, your brain is picking up information that it's not telling you. So it knows how much urine's in your bladder. It knows how warm the room is, how tight your clothes are, all those things. But most of the time, if you're healthy and not affected by pain, it's saying, they don't need to know about this. That bladder's not that full. It's not that hot. I won't tell them until it's really bad. So it actually sends messages down saying, don't worry about it. Don't be aware. And if you look at that sort of spectrum of sensitivity and you look at the female-male type bell curve of sensitivity, because it's not that some people are normal and others have dreadful sensitivity, we're all on a spectrum. And the female spectrum is a bit more to the right than the male spectrum. And if you've got persistent, recurrent pain stimuli, remember, read with that, immune stimuli, you're going to move your curve to the right and you're going to have more trouble with sensitivity. So it's really, where are you and which continuing stimuli are worsening your sensitivity? So this at Pelvic Pain Foundation is how we're now explaining how all these symptoms come together. And our approach is now looking at having it that both sides of that consultation desk will be looking at this in the same way. So we're teaching this approach, and we're hoping that you will look at it in this approach so that we get over some of that lack of communication between you and your patients. So really, we've got the three major parts of pain. There's the pelvic pain triggers, those visceral organs like a period or constipation. Don't all teens get constipated? I think so. And then there's the muscle reaction. Then there's the pain sensitization. And of course, endometriosis will be common but not essential. And if there are psychosocial issues, early adverse life events, that's going to bring over a whole other layer of difficulty and increased sensitization. So our pep talk educators are going into schools in your state and they're talking to 15 to 16 year olds. What's normal? What's not normal? How do the symptoms come together? Simple things they can do themselves and when to contact you for more help. We've been to a lot of schools across Australia and there's a lot of pain out there in teens. The earlier we can manage it, the earlier we can assist you, the better life that person will have and the less sensitised they'll become. So just a word about pain flares. The usual scenario, if you've got a bad day of a pain they've had before, not a new thing, but a pain flare, it's almost always that there will have been a flare of some sort of visceral thing, period, constipation, gastro, UTI, I don't know, whatever, which has resulted in their pelvic muscle pain going from aching and tight and tender to cramping and stabbing. And that's when they go to emergency department. So a visceral organ has given that bit extra stimulus, the sensitization's got going, the muscles have gone into a cramp, and they're going to emergency with that stabbing pain. This is a picture that I love. If you've been to a Noi one, this is actually a picture of Lorimer Moseley in the bath. And he's in his bath and he's got all these dreadful things he lives with all the time. You know, he lives with all these pain problems. He's got the tiger and the lion in there, but they're actually coping. And it'll be the tiny little bilby jumping in as well that overflows the bath and says, I can't cope today. I'm going to see my doctor. I'm going to the emergency department. It's often the little thing which actually makes their life impossible that day, and that's when they present. Useful questions, because I know you haven't got a lot of time. Nobody has in healthcare these days. You've had a lot of pain over time. Have you noticed anything different lately about, you know, your bleeding, your bladder, your bowel, etc.? That can often be what's the pain driver at the moment? What does your worst pain feel like? Listen for that stabbing, aching, sudden type pain that's affected by movement and immediately think, okay, we're talking muscle spasm here. The uterus doesn't care where you move. It doesn't care if you hang upside down. The muscles care. How many days a month do you have pain of any kind? Endometriosis pain and uterus pain can give you a really bad period. But if you've got pain on most days for more than 3 to 6 months, you've got pain sensitization of the central nervous system. That's the definition. And do you have problems with fatigue and nausea and poor sleep and anxiety and low mood? They're all features of that pain sensitization. So once you know what you're dealing with, you can manage it. Now, this is a guide to a bit of management of pain flares in emergency departments. So this is just sort of a start. Validation of pain is so important. She's scared of you. And the thing she's really scared of, she's scared that you won't believe her pain is real. Maybe she's had a negative laparoscopy, maybe her endometriosis has been excised, whatever it is, she's scared that you won't take her seriously. So if you take her seriously in the first line, you've already crossed a hurdle. Make the diagnosis and remember pelvic muscle pain. Do check those muscles, and you will often find that you've actually worked out what's been happening to her for a long time. Manage that short-term visceral stimulus. So if there's vaginal bleeding, even if it's small, in someone like this will trigger their pain. Even if they've maybe got a Mirena and they're not actually bleeding, but they're having cyclical pain, they're still having the hormonal stimulus. Those people, I'm a big suppository fan for people with pain, a Voltaren suppository lasts longer, closer to the action, seems to work better, great for using at night so they have a good sleep as well. If they're not bleeding and it's been brought on by something else, then I do recommend a diazepam suppository for acute use, not all the time or it won't work, but for keeping for those bad days, keeps them away from the emergency department. Emergency departments are a risk activity for this group because they'll come out stressed, embarrassed and on opioids. If they're constipated, glycerin suppository, these are all things they can do at home. If you pour it in the top end, that's lovely, but for right now, she's got a bowel action there and that is the stimulus to the making the muscles tight. Bit of blood in the urine, yes, she might have a UTI, but remember to always send it off because it could be bladder pain syndrome and not just UTIs. Persistent candida, well, you can put that behind her with regular fluconazole. You can take that out of the equation. And if she's got sensitization, you know, we've got lots of things to help you on our website. And we also have particular increased skills and training and all that through for our health practitioner subscribers. And when you examine them, make it a nice, warm, low-stress environment because when she's stressed, those muscles just tighten up more. And please, please, please avoid putting them on regular opioids because that's a trap. It worsens sensitization. Doesn't mean they can't have it for a couple of days after a laparoscopy, but after that, it will be a contributor to their pain throughout their life. And the first person that writes a script for regular opioids takes on a heavy burden of responsibility for that person. What is the exit strategy from those regular opioids? Does she know it will worsen her sensitization? What involvement will you have in helping her manage things over time? Please think very carefully before taking that on. Laparoscopies, what could be done better? Quite a lot, really. On our website, we've got a sheet called Tips and Tricks for having a smoother laparoscopy, Tips and Tricks for recovering well. It takes the person who reads it through from 3 months before their laparoscopy all the way through how to be set up well, how to prepare well, what to ask, what to do when they go home, what to talk to the anaesthetist about, what to talk to their gynae about. It's all there for you. And I used to always offer amitriptyline, 10 milligrams from the night of their surgery until they're fully recovered. It really does improve it. And we've got the stretchers. So please do remember us. We are a not-for-profit charity, but we're really here to help you because you are so important and you're important to us. So please be in touch and we would really like to work with you to make a difference in this really important area. And I think I've got a QR code there for you. So thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you are enjoying this series and will recommend it to your friends and colleagues. I'm Linda Calabresi. And on behalf of the team here at HealthEd, I look forward to joining you soon for our next podcast. If you enjoyed this audio segment, you can find out more about our free webcast lectures, which can be accessed from any device on our website at healthed.com.au.
The podcasts published on this page are for medical professionals only. The content is not a substitute for medical advice. If you have a health issue, you should seek the advice of a suitable qualified health professional.